Welcome to FinTech Impact. I'm your host, Jason Pereira. Today on the show, I have Tom Riemann, CEO and founding partner of Practice Intel. Practice Intel is a platform that helps advisors grow by using a data-driven approach to help give them insights into their own business. And with that, here's my interview with Tom. Tom, thanks for your time today.
Hey, Jason, you bet. Glad to be here.
Tom Riemann of Practice Intel. Tell us about Practice Intel.
We are a data-driven platform designed to help advisors and firms scale organic growth. We have fundamentally cracked the code to the magic land of organic growth.
Crack the code, eh? That's a claim. All right, we're going to dive into that. Before we get into it, let's talk about how the company came to be.
Oh my goodness, that goes back a long ways. Like most, I think most really big ideas, they usually start with a small kernel. And so I go back over 20 years. And having this realization, and this was the late 90s, I want to say, so close to 25 years now, the realization that our industry was so incredibly commoditized. Now, I think everybody can say that, know that, but I had a front row seat to seeing that. But at the same time, you could always identify there was a small subset of great advisors. I called them back then true advisors. And so the question over the last 20, 25 years is like, how do you replicate those? Those are the engine, that's the engine to delivering a phenomenal value proposition. They were generating the most revenue, like we've ought to figure out how do we replicate that. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a very long journey over the last 20 plus years. The data component was really the key component that ultimately cracked the code. And that was in my role previous to Practice Intel at JD Power, where I led the wealth solutions practice.
Okay, excellent. Basically, you realized that there was this opportunity to pretend to take a data-driven approach to basically helping people figure out how to run the optimal business. You decided to, you know, you did this in a previous instance at JD Power. Talk to me about what you saw as the opportunity that wasn't being served when you started Practice Intel.
Yeah, that's a good question. And so just to clarify, in my role at JD Power, we were able to identify the key attributes that makes advice, right? And that was through a tremendous amount of consumer research, published extensively around that research. But that research was still at the industry level. So it's at a macro level. Guess what? About 10% of clients say their advisor delivers on these fundamental advice attributes. There happens to be seven of them. But when they do deliver on them, their advocacy and net promoter scores in the 90s, right? So great. And then it degrades pretty dramatically from there. So this was just a matter of putting all the pieces together, taking my background in organizational science, my background in the industry. I'm founding partner, but I have other partners, one of whom has a PhD in organizational psychology, another one who was a head of one of the largest OSJs under Cambridge here down in the States. So we brought a lot of insights to the table, in practical insights about our industry, academic insights around process, and then data-driven insights on what was most important. And you put all those things together, and you create a deliverable that helps advisors actually and firms actually move the needle.
Excellent. Okay, so let's talk about this from the experience standpoint. I'm an advisor. I want to scale my practice. I come to you. What does that experience look like?
Yeah, so we're a SaaS platform, right? Software as a service platform. So they come to our portal. And now I say that I see future iterations where we're going to be embedded into their native technology within their firm. But they come to the portal. The first step is to understand what their clients think about the advice experience. As I said, there's seven things that when advisors or clients attribute those seven things to their advisor, great things happen. And they're very basic, really. Is the advice comprehensive? Does the advisor understand me? Does the advisor have my best interest in mind? Do I know the fees I'm paying? Things like that. So I like to say that the attributes that make advice. So we help then, because we have the data at the industry level, great, but we bring that research capability all the way down to the practice level. So the advisor is able to deploy through a very simple turnkey system, the strategic client research to say, hey, how am I doing on these critical, or better put, strategic drivers of organic growth, and where are the gaps and how can I improve? So they do the research, they upload via Redtail or Wealthbox very simply. It's very benign PII information we capture as well, first name, last name, and email. And then they're getting data around the seven attributes. They're also measuring something called the Relationship Quality Index. Now that's really to replace this idea that satisfaction and retention are good metrics. We actually think they're very flawed. So we measure advocacy, loyalty, trust, value for fees, and overall experience and melt all that into an algorithm and create a relationship quality index. The higher that number, the more embedded growth, because the greater the advocacy, but also the higher the the value and the quality of the experience being advocated for. So that's where it starts.
Excellent. So bottom line is you're taking a pulse check first, knowing what to look for because you figured out exactly where what the secret sauce is. And then you basically benchmark them against where they're going to go. Let's talk about each of these key points of secret sauce. So take me through them one at a time, what they mean and why they're important.
Yeah. So I'll start with the last one, Jason, why they're important. And they're important because they showed a very high level of correlation that when they were delivered in aggregate, clients advocated at exceptionally high levels. Right.
Now, it's not just one piece, it's the sum is greater than the parts.
Correct. Yes. Absolutely. And when we look at the actual attributes, and I'll walk through each one of them, well, they're pretty basic, or let me rephrase that, they make sense. They're common sense attributes. So the attributes include, is the advice comprehensive? Now, what does that mean? So many will say, gosh, clients don't necessarily know what comprehensive actually is and all of that. So the way we view it is the advice comprehensive through the eyes of the client? And every client, different stage of life, different levels of complexity, right? But ultimately, is it comprehensive for them? That's first. Secondly, does the client say the advisor understands their values, goals, and aspirations, right? So this is obviously key to the work we do. And that's pretty straightforward. The next one would be, does the client perceive that the advisor has their best interest in mind? And by the way, that particular attribute, when we look at some of the data there, almost 4 out of 10 clients can't say with certainty that their advisor has their best interest in mind. And of course, that's really troubling, right? When we look at, does the client understand the fees they pay? Now, you want to take a guess at how many clients can't say with certainty on that one?
What country are we talking about? And yours, bad, mine, horrible, but continue. Yeah, I'm taking a deep sigh because this is a problem.
It's awful. Yeah.
80%, like 75% or more?
Yeah, so actually it's about 6 out of 10 can't say with certainty. Close, yeah. And when we think about the dispersion, now the Canadian data hasn't necessarily been published, but we can just assume, and I love it.
So I've seen it. It's brutal. 50% think they're paying nothing at the bank. Well,
you go. And Jason, you and I talked about this before. I spent a bunch of my career working in Canada. So I spent, 10 plus years doing consulting work in and around Manulife. I've been across the provinces. And I know everybody says, hey, Canada's 10 years behind.
20.
In this advice experience thing, the component, the concept, I'd argue you guys are not that far behind only because we're so far behind, right? Below, and below the 49th parallel, if I can use a
Canadian. Fair enough. I'm below the 49th parallel, right? But nevertheless, it's fine.
Right, yes. Okay, so that's value. Do you know what you're paying? Another one, are you connected? How well are you connected to the client? And that's a combination of things that include a frequency of contact, satisfaction and content, things like that. So let's see, what did I miss there? Oh, is there a financial plan? And is the financial plan effective? Really interesting data around that. So again, all this published out of JD Power. So 6 out of 10 clients roughly say they have a plan. Cool, right?
Not true.
Yeah, but that's okay. But here's the real question. So if we think of a plan, and we certainly do, a plan as a mechanism, a tool to facilitate comprehensive advice, right? That's the whole purpose of it.
Yep.
That when you correlate the people with plans, but then the people with plans that say they have comprehensive advice, that number drops in half. And only about half of the people with plans say they're getting comprehensive advice. So that's a real problem spot as well.
Just to stop here quickly, my good friend Preet Banerjee just finished his PhD dissertation last year, and it was on the impact of basically the value advice, but specifically his survey looked at multiple variables or dimensions. And the thing that basically really moved the needle on client satisfaction and happiness, and if they felt they were getting value, was did they receive a financial plan? Now, financial plan was not, fully articulated or described. It was their concept of it. And their belief that they were receiving a financial plan, whether they got a financial plan or just a couple projections or an IPS or whatever else it was, had huge material deviation in terms of satisfaction. So yeah, the empirical evidence from academia is completely backing up your claim here.
Yeah. And we think about, you used a couple words there, satisfaction, happy. I'm going to take 2 steps back and say that if we think about our industry, we're in one of the few industries, professions in human history that can have such a profound impact on people's lives.
Yeah, I'll argue this all the time. At the end of the day, we can have the biggest day-to-day one, because you go to your doctor when you're sick, you go to your lawyer if you have to, you hope never to, you have to not have a lawyer altogether, accountants because you want to file taxes, but who else proactively sits across from you and tries to better your life on a regular basis?
There you go. Now, and by the way, we call it the fourth great profession. And I say we call it, one of my advisory board members, this guy named James Lee, who's the past president of the Financial Planning Association. That was his mantra during his presidency at FPA. Fourth great profession. It's what actually drew me to him. And if you think about the fourth great profession, of course, it leads to what's the first three? And the original first three were medicine, law, and engineering.
Yeah.
And if you think about those three things, like engineering, you cannot navigate through the day without having engineering impact you every single moment of the day. But yeah. So we have this phenomenal industry. And the question is, how do we bridge that gap? And that there's a gap, and there's a persistent gap between what can be and what is. And that is really the fundamental purpose of Practice Intel. And such a big part of it, Jason, is the data. So I'm at a heart, I'm a field guy at heart, but I'm also an academic geek at heart as well.
And we have that in common.
Yeah, it's, well, that's great. And my wife has a PhD, to give you an idea of what kind of things attract me. So when you think about what actually motivates people to act, there's a really great theory. And it comes from a guy who wrote an article 20 plus years ago in HBR. His name was Chris Arduous. Everybody can look this up. It's a great article. It's titled Teaching Smart People to Learn. And he went in and tried to figure out why people at McKinsey, I think it was, you couldn't get them to learn. Why they wouldn't like dive into getting better and learning. And the reality was, one, they didn't fail very often. But when they did, huge defensive mechanisms kicked in. And so what he found is that data along with the consequences were an amazing and powerful tool, basically an irrefutable moment of truth. So Jason, you and I can look at you if you're an advisor and say, listen, Jason, you got to up your game. You know, and you're like, yeah, Tom, whatever, thanks, and you leave. But if your clients are saying to you, you're not delivering on these core attributes that are most important, that is that irrefutable moment of truth that makes even the very best advisor go, maybe I should do something about it.
Yep. All right. Okay. Talk to me about the methodology in which you're serving this up. You're collecting a lot of data. Actually, let's talk about what's involved in the survey first. Like, how do you capture this information and do, because surveys are notoriously subjective in some cases, but also skewed by people's own perceptions of themselves. So how are you trying to get to the actual core of what's really happening?
Listen, the reality is you're right. There is no such thing as perfect research, but there is such a thing as research rigor. And we certainly bring that to the table. And again, just going back to my time at J.D. Power and being embedded in an institutional consumer research engine, and then some of my colleagues in terms of their academic pedigree. But one, we're keeping the survey very short, very tight, just focused on those seven attributes and then those five attributes related to the relationship quality index. So overall, there's 14 questions. One of the attributes amongst the seven has three questions. So the questions are very straightforward. The questions are randomized in the survey. Every time a survey lands, those questions gets reordered to ensure we avoid any question order bias. And it would, two other thoughts there. One, listen, the reality is there's always going to be perceptual impact. Yeah. But we feel that questions are very straightforward. Does your advisor have your best interest in mind? Boom. It's very straightforward. Does your advisor provide comprehensive advice? Very straightforward. And then the other part of it is, of course, getting completes. That's the hardest part. Like, how do you make sure you get a really good representative sample coming back? And some of our, and by the way, we are, what's today, the third, we are a day past 11 months since concept. Just to put this in perspective, now we have built an amazingly robust, powerful platform, and we are knee deep in some very large enterprise conversations because of the compelling nature of what we're doing, our data-driven platform to scale organic growth. But we're still getting examples of its worthiness with individual advisors. But one of our early adopters, he's gotten about a 50% response rate, which in research terms is off the charts. Mm. I'd equate that to a couple of things. One, it's a super short, tight survey. Two, the survey actually comes from the advisor's email. So that's part of the infrastructure of the deploying the surveys. Three, we do a lot of work around having the advisor tee up the client to know the survey is coming. Mm. And then I'd argue the last part, and just as importantly, the questions are really poignant. And if you think about it, the questions you ask indicate or lend insight into what's important to you. If I say, what's for dinner? What's important to me? I'm hungry. But if I'm asking about these seven really important attributes, then that shows that those matter to me.
Absolutely. Okay. So you're asking about those, you collect those, you basically now, how are you serving up the results to advisors so that they're easily digestible and they understand where they stand?
Yeah. So it is an elegant, dynamic dashboard. One of the things we've been getting the feedback on, and I know where a lot of this will be via just verbal podcast or just audio, incredibly, and a beautiful, elegant dashboard displaying the attributes. The phrase I'm getting from people, and including the head of product at Orion, looked at it and said, this is an amazing looking, beautiful dashboard. So it's intuitive. The seven attributes are there. It shows you where are you on the, how many of your clients said you nailed it. The spread on the continuum, right? So if your clients are saying, yes, you're delivering on all, you're an ideal, in the middle, not really on the left. The relationship quality index is a speedometer dial. There's trend charts to show, because trending is really critical here. This is meant to be tracking surveys, tracking research. So you get a glimpse of what clients are thinking. You see the gaps, you work on it, and then you measure again. So that's the idea. So it's, I don't know how else to put that, Jason. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Well done. All right. So let's talk about giving them the information. What are you doing to nudge them into action?
Yeah, great question. And the reality is the information itself is the nudge into action. So data is that irrefutable moment of truth. So first, if the first benchmark to look at for an advisor would be, what did I think it would be? Like, hey, there's those seven attributes. How are you doing on those? Hey, I'm doing pretty well. I think I'm nailing it. Everybody, I'm delivering comprehensive advice to everybody, or everybody understands the fees because we talk about it all the time.
Are you a better than average driver? Yes, that's fine.
Yeah, right. But yeah, correct. Absolutely. And most people do think much more highly. And I can't, for instance, the Dunning-Kruger effect is actually the behavioral bias. Mm-hmm. We think we are more skilled than we actually are. So the very first moment of motivation is seeing where the data actually sits. So think about data. Data is a cool thing. Data creates a virtuous cycle. So one, data motivates, provides that irrefutable moment of truth. They see what their clients are saying. But data also ideally provides strategic direction. And that's the next part, is they see where the gaps are. And then we have the second part of our platform is advisor education content. And I'm going to use the word unique around this. The vast majority of advisor education, notice I'm not using the word practice management, although it will fall under that. Most practice management is either efficiency plays, right, running back office, or is focused on the sales process. Our content is entirely focused on the advice process. And how can advisors be more effective in delivering on the advice process, which is a distinctly different process than selling, in goals, in process, in relationships and outcomes? And how can they then, in turn, better execute on those seven attributes, which are all part of the advice process? It is rich, very rich content, high production value. So I just did my FINRA annual CEs. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, I don't know how it is up in Canada, but the learning content is like 1980s at best.
I'll say it's, we don't get it through the one provider, it can be hit or miss. So unfortunately, countless people get it just by listening to people talking heads talking about where they think the market's going. But you can find quality if you dig anywhere.
Yeah, no. So we not only wanted to make sure we were bringing in really powerful, rich content that made a difference and was process-driven, granular, actionable, but also in a very high production quality environment with great narrative, videos, animation. And right now we have 18 modules within that. Now, there's the second part, is to actually give them that strategic direction, right? Where do you act and then how can you act on it? And then, of course, continual research allows you to track improvement. And by tracking improvement, that further motivates you to act. Here, yep. Jason, let me say one more thing there. Ultimately, if we think about advisors, every advisor should understand whether they're referable or not, which is really the core of advocacy. And if they're not, they need ideally to know how do they improve their stance in that. And the vast majority of advisors are sitting on the negative side of that equation.
Yeah. What gets the old saying, what gets measured gets done, right? At the end of the day, if you don't have a baseline, then what are you going to do? And it's funny, I've often said this. Unfortunately, most advisors are very good at self-delusion. When you're either working on your own, in which case, what's your benchmark other than your mirror? You're working within a office with multiple advisors, in which case those people become your benchmark in a lot of ways. And what are the odds that you just happen to be in an office with someone who's really got it down, who's one of those growth people? Probably not. They've spun off, started their own business, right? So the reality is that a lot of what gets done is comparing to the what's close to them, which is often a really poor sample size for benchmarking. And yeah, opening up to wider data is quite the eye-opener for a lot of people.
And Jason, so let's pause on that for just a second. Think about our industry. So think about the standard metrics of our industry. For the most part, they predominantly are advisor metrics about the client. They're advisor metrics about the client, right? It's AUM, it's client size, it's households, it's all those things. Instead, what we're creating is a set of metrics that are client data about the advisor. So it creates an entirely new lens into advisor performance and advisor improvement, performance improvement. And that's one of the big issues in our industry. You walk into a wirehouse, they're like, hey, how you guys doing? Great, man. Here's our production this year. Here's our rank listing of who produced what this month, this quarter. I'm like, no. If we ask the real question, which one of your advisors have the best relationship quality index, meaning the greatest advocacy and the greatest amount of embedded growth in their practice versus attrition or regulatory risk? So that's a big issue in our industry, is switching the metrics we use.
Excellent. Okay. So talk to me about user feedback. We talked about feedback from other companies. Let's talk about the advisors who've actually said, okay, I'm going to expose myself to this. Actually, let's talk about the reaction. How many of them see what's being said here and say, oh boy, I need to change something? Or how many of them decide to do the ostrich and put their head in the sand? What kind of percentage, what kind of uptake are you seeing on actual improvement?
Yeah. So first, I'd almost say that there's a discernment between those advisors that kind of go, no, I don't even want to know. Right. And I always, my phrase to that is they don't want to know because they already know.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, do you want to step on the scale? No, not really. Why? Because I already know. Right. So that's one area. And I'm just posting to LinkedIn today a bit about advisor change and pointing to a past Barron's article I wrote around advisor change. And the reality is that we need to recognize there's a movable middle. We need those that don't, are not interested and are fighting, are adamantly against change. We say to them, good luck in your next career.
Well played.
Yeah, okay.
I can be cold. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, but I don't mean that. And listen, I was an advisor, I'm going to use air quotes on that, for the Equitable back in the early 90s. And to call me an advisor is really just a misnomer. I was a variable universal life salesperson. So anyway, so that's one segment. Now, when we look at the feedback we've been getting for those that are diving in, it's really quite wonderful because the advisors so far that have really leaned in have been the better advisors and they've been hungry for the feedback. So one of the advisors point to another advisor and I'll say his RQI is 93. Again, so that's more than 9 out of 10 giving top box to those five things, loyalty, trust, overall experience, value for fees, and NPS, right? Top box. But he only had about 70% of his clients saying they fully understood the fees they paid. And he immediately, and I just love this because this is about data driving strategic action. He immediately said, all right, every client meeting we have, there's a new bullet point on the agenda and it's fees. It's cost. So it drove him to go, got it. Hey, listen, he could have said, listen, they love me. I'm good. I don't need any of this stuff. But instead he allowed it to continue to hone his game. Think about a pro golfer. Right? They continue to go to the coach. And that's the same kind of thing here. So I think we'll find as we move forward here that there's going to be that ideal middle that wants to get better, whether it's the younger advisor that has come into the business with a little more acumen because of an education from university or college around financial planning, whether it's that second career individual that's really in it for the right reason. I think there's 20, 30, 40% of our industry this will be perfect for. And I think we'll get really good response.
Excellent. All right. So talk to me about actual metrics on success. So those who really grab it by the reins, what kind of uptake are they seeing in this? Or what kind of uptick in whatever measurable, forget satisfaction, growth, organic growth is the deal here. What kind of organic growth benefits are they seeing?
So Jason, as I mentioned, we're 11 months since concept. So that is still something to be measured and shared, let's say a year from now. That's the reality. Now, the great part about this is we're grounded in data and we're grounded in really solid experiential perspectives. It makes sense that you want to deliver on these things. So we are beyond confident. Oh, by the way, I'm going to add one more little data point. So I mentioned J.D. Power, that about 10% of clients say their advisor is delivering on these seven attributes. McKinsey last year found that about 10% of advisors are realizing off the charts organic growth. And when you go down that next decile past that, it drops precipitously. And then down the first, second quartile, it's basically negative. So we believe there's a super high correlation between that, those 10% that are saying my advisor is knocking it out of the park and those advisors that are realizing that great organic growth.
Excellent. Okay. So basically, maybe we'll have an update conversation in the future about how this has all worked out in terms of metrics, right? Because like this, I love that getting the numbers. Right. So basically, before we wrap up, there's three questions I ask everybody on a positive note. The first question I have for you is, if you had one wish for something you could change in your company or the industry as a whole, what would it be?
I'm Jason. Obviously, based on our conversations, the one thing I'd want to change in the industry, and that would to shift this dynamic around the percentage of advisors who actually deliver on its full promise. How cool would it be? I'm not going to say we're going to change the whole industry. Never going to happen. I might have said that 20 years ago, but now I'm old and wise enough to realize that won't happen. But imagine we can change another 20% of advisors. So instead of having top 10% delivering on the full promise, we had 30% delivering on the full promise.
I'll give you a data answer to that same statement. We aren't going to change the entire distribution, but I would very much like to see the midpoint of that distribution shift to the positive.
Oh, I love it. And now I get how you really are. So yes, let's move over one.
Everything's a normal distribution unless otherwise proven.
Yeah. But just pause for a moment and think about what that would actually do. So let's say including Canada, there's roughly 400,000 financial advisors. And is that a fair number? If you include US and Canada, there's about 400,000 financial advisors. 330 plus 90 is the numbers I see.
No, I think you have to go up closer to 120 in Canada. Okay. So you're not too far from the ballpark.
Okay, so let's say 450. All right, so 450, I'm going to do my math here, and we have 20% of those. That's 90,000 advisors that we shift markedly towards a better advice experience, right? How many clients does each one of those advisors serve? 20, 200?
What should they be serving? That's the other question, right? How many people can you actually serve? So you want to do a really high touch service. You're talking 100 households at most, if that. But like right there, like you just did the math. If you missed 100 households on, what would we say, 25,000?
90,000.
90,000. Okay, let's round to 100,000, right? So 100,000, 100 households, 10 million households across Canada, the US.
Like, and that's impacting not just the individual, but the families and their legacy and their communities. I mean, that's almost the
number of households in Canada. That's the scale we're talking about. Yeah. That's probably the number of households in California, but whatever. The point is that, the scale of that is enormous.
And Jason, just I want to plan on this one more second. So there is an incredible altruistic purpose of Practice Intel to advance the advice profession. Now, of course, in that process, the advisors and firms that support them will realize a tremendous amount of success. Without a doubt. So we don't lose sight of the monetary gain here. But if we're grounded in that, we are doing something of great good. And that's what motivates us, by the way. I don't know if that's another one of your questions, but.
Excellent. So next question is, what's been the biggest challenging in the company to where it is today?
Yes. First of all, anybody out in your listening audience, have they ever started a wealth tech or fintech company? That's the first thing. Maybe you have, Jason.
No, I will tell you that there's a number of people in the industry who listen.
Yeah, great. So if I think in many cases, I think the guy from Nvidia or Nivea or whichever the chip company is, forgive me for not saying it correctly. Yeah. Yes. Said, if you actually knew what it was like to do it, you'd never do it. I use the example very much of climbing Everest and not the romantic version of climbing Everest, but the arduous, painstaking journey that it actually takes. Now, that requires, of course, an incredible belief in what you're doing. It also requires good capital grounding. It requires some maturity and all of that. But it is just the enormity of the task of bringing concept to life. It is difficult.
Kind of reminds me of what's said about memories, recollection of pain, specifically around women and childbirth. And if women could truly remember what it was to give birth to children, to give kids on a regular basis, they would never do it twice.
Right.
But it is what it is. The ladies can dispute that all they want. But my wife, basically, after a very long delivery, took one deep breath and was like, and then literally I was like, what? Like, how did you go from that to that? It's nuts. Right. And it's like your memory was starting to fade right away. The last question is, what excites you the most about what it is you're working on? And keeps you getting up out of bed in the morning to keep on fighting a good fight.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I said earlier about the impact that we can have. And the continuing evolution of our platform, and there's one thing I'll add to that, is we've had this entire conversation and haven't used the two letters. So we, of course, have AI as part of our platform. We have just added an AI prospect conversation simulator. So where you can go in, because it's one thing to know where you are. It's another thing to start figuring out how can you get better. But what the AI conversation simulator does, it gives you the opportunity to actually refine your narrative and hone your approach with, ready for this, as I said, real life. How about that for attributing life to AI? But in an AI interactive manner where you're having a conversation based on any level of detail you want about who that prospect is and what they're thinking. It's really powerful. So continue to do that is pretty cool. And then just maybe the last thing I'd say to that is it's one thing to birth something, and then it's another to see it grow up. So here we'll use the kid analogy, right? To pull this thread through, particularly in the conversations we're having with really large enterprises, that in itself is a behemoth task. Getting through, and we've got wonderful connectivity at the most senior levels of our industry, but pulling that thread through to get implemented in some of these large firms is in itself a task worthy of the effort and taking a lot of energy and strategy.
Excellent. Tom, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Hey, Jason, appreciate it.
So that was my interview with Tom Raymond of Practice Intel. Hope you enjoyed that. And if you're in the market for improving your organic growth, who isn't, and taking a data-driven approach to it, by all means, take a look. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, take care.
This podcast was brought to you by Woodgate Financial, an award-winning financial planning firm catering to high-net-worth individuals and their families. To learn more, go to woodgate.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, or find more episodes at jasonpereira.ca.